how forgiveness works. I've shared with the audience many times how I spent literally decades teaching the how-to of forgiveness a la first century Aramaic Yeshua, and not having a clue why and how it worked. And that when you introduce forgiveness to people as it's actually meant to be done, to somebody new, it sounds ridiculous to do what forgiveness asks you to do. And so that discussion came up, and we got into the refinements of it and the explanation of it once again. I was pleasantly surprised how many people were in the group were ready for that conversation once again, and how meaningful it was for them to get it. So I decided to start today's show with that explanation once again, so that the clarity, you know, this I've shared many times on the show that the first 35 years I taught first century Aramaic forgiveness, I did not have a clue why it worked, how it worked, just that it worked, you know, like, you know, nothing to believe. If you just do the process, you'll find your life changes. You know, Dr. Tim has shared many times how this set of tools is one of the most effective he's ever seen, and the thing that excites him about it is it's teachable to anybody, and it is. And you know, I tend to think once somebody hears it, of course, then they understand it. But I realize that it's something that needs to be heard. Of course, I speak it, and I go, oh, there, see, that's so simple. But then sometimes even I forget it took me 35 years to be taught, to understand the dynamics sufficiently to realize why and how the process works. So I'd like to share a little bit about that. Unless, Janie, you have a hand up. If we do, we'll go for the hand before we go for that explanation. We'll always have room for that.
We do not have a hand up.
Cool. Then let's go for it. So, a starting point, recognize that when your mind says, I see something, I taste something, I smell something, I hear something, the truth is you don't. You know, people say, oh, there's that horrible chemical over there. It has such a horrible smell. I smell something horrible coming off of that chemical. You know something? Chemicals don't have a smell. There's no such thing. What we call smell is an interpretation given by the brain. So recognizing that we smell things with the brain, not with the nose. We see things with the brain, not with the eyes. We hear things, not with the ears, but with the brain. We taste things with the brain, not the tongue. If you want to document that for yourself, there's a really excellent short, I think it's about a 20-minute video. Dr. Tim introduced it to the show back a couple of years ago. You know, we've been teaching it for decades, but he came across this video and was like quite wowed and shared it with us. A man named Anil, A-N-I-L, Seth, S-E-T-H. He's a neuroscientist. And he explains how it really works. It's a great explanation from a neuroscientist's point of view. So, in essence, what he explains is, much in alignment with the CIA's teaching. If you go to our website, you'll find a book there, or a quote from the CIA, where they are studying perception. And the CIA says that we do not experience through our senses what's happening in the world, but our brain generates what our senses tell us is happening in the world. So it's our brain that's telling to us, not our senses. So we're going to label the constructs of the mind, perception. Everybody's reality, everybody's perception is unique because their brain is giving them literally the world they see, taste, touch, hear, and smell. So reality, as opposed to actuality, what's actually happening in the world, is the output of the mind. Two reasons why people can attend an event and have totally and completely different realities. One, they attend an event with a friend, a dear friend, and the content of person, of friend one's mind is different than the content stimulated in the mind of person two by the event. You know, there's some Harvard research we've talked about that tell us that in the time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of data that goes into building your perceptual construct, your reality, is 9 bits. And of course, if I have a different 9 bits of data fired by an event than by the resonance from an event, different from the 9 bits that are fired in your mind, obviously your reality is going to be different than mine. That's one thing that can change it. But there's another really deeply important thing to understand that can change the reality. And that is, the goal that you have is the thing that drives your mind to perception. It's the driver. You know, if I have a computer and let's say I go up and I buy myself a nice new IBM Pro printer and I hook it up to the computer, does the printer print? No. What do I have to do? I have to install a driver. If I don't have a driver for that printer, it's not going to work. If I get rid of my Pro printer, I go out and buy myself a nice new HP DeskJet. Can I plug it in and print? Not till I put in a driver. So in order for there to be an output, there's got to be something that guides or directs that process. In order for a mind to have an output, there's got to be something that guides or directs that process. Now, a mosquito watching an event has goals. The goal is food. The thing that indicates just food is heat. Infrared is the visual receptor for the mosquito. And so it doesn't look over and see, you know, that beautiful young man or that beautiful woman that you see, that you have goals for. They see infrared signals of food. Perception serves their survival, and they go and eat. The constructs that your mind show you are a result of the event happening, the data resonated by that event, and the goal that selects or drives the process of perception. So people who have two totally different goals for exactly the same event. Now I was in a vacation area once, and there was a young man who, this was at an intensive, and he went out and it was on the ocean, and he got caught in a riptide and almost died. That became a story that illustrated the difference of perception based on goals. Now, I mean, literally this guy came, we were, you know, in an island resort, and he went out and got caught in this riptide. And when he made it back in, he was looking pretty rough. And we had a discussion about this whole thing called perception and how perception can change. So let's just take that event. Someone had taken that man to the island with the idea of, you know, I don't know, stealing his fortune, and knew when and where the riptides were and got him to get in the water, and he drowned. They'd have had a very happy perceptual construct about that event. On the other hand, if it were a dear friend who took him on vacation and he went and got caught in the riptide and drowned, he wouldn't have his mind would not generate quite the happy perceptual construct that the fellow who wanted him dead would produce. So recognize the power of a goal in generating perception. And notice that unless you're just a generally miserable person, if people are fulfilling the goals you have for them, you're pretty happy. And the more they fulfill the goals, the bigger the result of them fulfilling the goals you have. Generally, the stronger the positive response is going to be to them fulfilling a goal you have for them. You know, somebody says, I'm going to buy you a diamond ring, and you're happy and you're joyful, and you go, oh, that's great. And they bring you back a quarter carat diamond, you go, oh, that's pretty cool. Or they bring you back a 3-carat diamond, and you go, that is really cool. What's the difference? Well, the fulfillment of the goal is qualitatively different with those two different rewards. So recognize that the thing that selection, there's this Harvard research we've talked about that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of data that goes into building your perceptual construct in that time frame is 9 bits. So literally, they've got somebody hooked up to electrodes and they're measuring brain cell firings and there are 10,000 units of electrical activity in the brain. And then they're checking out what gets into conscious awareness, our perception, our mind's construct. And what they come up with is, actually the stats in the lab were 7 ±2, a maximum of 9 bits, a minimum of 7. Or pardon me, minus would be a minimum of 5. So there's only so much room for information to be funneled into those perceptual constructs. And obviously, if there are 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity and only 9 can be used, there has to be something that selects which 9. Through the law of resonance and the operation of the mind, what selects which 9 bits of data you're going to get to see is your goal. So every reality served up by the mind is an interaction between energetic patterns from the actuality, data stored from the past in the mind that is brought into activity through resonance in the mind. If I say, don't think about the color of your car, what happens? The word don't doesn't mean anything. I mentioned the body of my thought is the color of your car, and that's what's going to fire in brain cells. It's just a simple law of resonance. So the interaction between those two, mediated by your goal. If you have no goal for an event, then chances are, when it happens, you'll pay little or no attention, perhaps not even being aware that it happened. But somebody who has a goal for that event, man, they're right on it. They see it, they experience it, and in spades, they know it happened. But if you don't have a goal for it, you may not even notice. You know, somebody who's a Hawkeye for old cars, this, you know, 53 Chevy all polished up, looking like a brand new car out of the showroom, drives by. And the person who's, you know, really a car buff, wow, did you see that car? And the person who doesn't drive, doesn't care about cars, didn't even notice the color, or that it was an old car, or it's just another car going down the street. Goals play a major role in what shows up as a construct in your mind called perception. Now, where's forgiveness come in here? Well, in the Aramaic language, the word forgive, the word that's been translated as forgive, is shabag or shabak. The word actually means to cancel, to let loose, or to untie. We've selected, because it's the most effective word of the three, at least for me, the word cancel to represent forgive in Aramaic of the possible translations. The other two are similar, they're close, but cancel is right on track. Now, sometimes people will incorrectly use the idea of canceling and think they've forgiven. Oh, I had all kinds of rage and fear about that, so I just canceled my rage and fear. Not going to happen. Doesn't happen. Can't happen. Once you load a goal into the mind, the goal acts as a resonating energy field that recruits or brings the firing of brain cells into activity. Once the brain cells are firing, you can't cancel the activity of those brain cells. It just isn't applicable. It's like trying to use a hammer to screw in a screw. You can't do it. Well, you can pound the hammer in, but you're not screwing in the screw. So you want to use the tool properly. So if in a particular circumstance, rage or fear or sadness or grief comes up, you don't cancel the rage or fear or sadness or grief. You look for the goal that is the driver for that perceptual construct. And the way that you collapse that perceptual construct is by canceling the goal. Now, I can remember the early days of learning that in Aramaic, the word forgive, shebag, meant to cancel. And it had to do with canceling goals. And that was interesting. You know, it was kind of like, well, that's cool. But kind of so what? And as I was teaching, you know, the point at which I touched into Aramaic, I'd been doing this style of work full part-time for about 6 years and then full-time for 4 or 5 years after that. And I ran into the Aramaic, and, you know, I was teaching, and so I would every once in a while in my workshops mention this idea of canceling a goal. It didn't have a lot of meaning for me. It was just, oh, well, here's an interesting piece of information. If you have listened to the show for long, you know that I like to bring forward interesting pieces of information. And it was only after sharing that idea, just, you know, kind of offhandedly with people, and having several people come back to me and say, wow, you know, I started doing that canceling of goals thing that you talk about. That's really profoundly powerful. And I was like, kind of like, oh, it is? Really? Okay. So as I started to look and experience it personally and share it with others more deeply, it became, oh, my God, this is the key, and it is. It is the missing piece, P-E-A-C-E. So people will often say, well, Michael, this is a really good goal, and they really did do what I said they did, and I'm really upset by them. Why should I cancel the goal? Well, here's the lie the mind tells us. I'm upset because somebody did something. Remember that our definition of denial in this work is when I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of something inside of me. Denial. So when I say that really upset me, I'm now in denial. When I deny something in my mind access to conscious awareness by telling my mind a lie and instructing my mind to reinforce that lie, they made me mad. Now, I've been mad 87 different times with 42 different people. My mad's about me, it's not about them. But when I tell my mind the lie that I'm mad because of that, my mind has to hide from me the real cause of my anger. And that hiding is called dissociation. It's cutting yourself off from access to the real truth behind whatever it is that's going on. So when I deny, I dissociate from content in my own mind. I lock it away in a drawer that says, you're not allowed to access this accurately again. Doing that is called creating for yourself an unnatural condition, which is an unconscious mind. It is not natural for a human being to have an unconscious mind, I offer. And yet, psychologists will tell us that 90, 95, as much as perhaps 98% of our so-called thinking, our cycling of information, is unconscious. How much denial does someone have to be in to hide 98% of their minds from themselves? Now, the problem with that denial and dissociation is that by denial, I've added energy to whatever that is that I don't want to see is the truth. And when I add energy to it, I intensify its amplitude. You know, let's imagine that I have a 3-foot diameter spring and I have it sitting here on the floor and it's sitting there. Can the spring do anything? Can it jump up? No. But if I push down on the spring, let's say I push it down 2 inches and then I let go, what's going to happen? It's going to jump back up. It might just be a little blip, but it's going to move. If I push it down and 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 I get 3 or 4 big guys to come up and give me some help and we really crank that puppy like so it is so compressed, it is so pushed down, what happens when I let go of it? Kaboom, there's a lot of energy stored in it. Well, if I live in denial, if I deny something over and over, you made me mad, she made me mad, he made me mad, that made me mad, they made me mad. If I compress that, I've intensified the potential energy in it, and anything that is potentized in my mind, the energy wave that radiates out from me from those brain cells. Remember that energy by definition is motion. That motion suppressed is intensified and radiates out from me literally on an unconscious level. Measurable high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought, and through resonance going to tend to pull somebody in who's going to do exactly what I don't want to have done. Remember, we've talked about how resonance creates motion toward. So I have this thing I never want to have happen to me again, and I'm sure about it, and 1,000 times I push it down, and 1,000 times stronger that field goes out and says, somebody come and do this to me. And because resonance creates motion toward, and somebody is in resonance with those brain cells in me, they're going to show up, and they're going to be inclined to do the behavior. And when they do that behavior, it's going to resonate those brain cells that I've dissociated from. And here's what happens. I take that which I've said, I never want to look at that. I'm going to keep this hidden from myself forever, which means I'm not going to have direct access to it. But when they resonate those brain cells in me, when they get those brain cells firing, I'm going to use those brain cells to build my brain's image of them. And they're going to show up in my mind with my problem attached. And I'm going to swear, I'm going to be sure that it's their problem. That's called projection. So I build a construct out of what I've dissociated from of others, and then I'm sure that others are the cause of what's going on inside of me. So denial, dissociation, projection. So now I have a construct that proves to me out of my own dissociated content that somebody else is the problem in my life. Of course, sooner or later, I have to remember that I've been through this 87 different times with 42 different people, and therefore, it must be about me. And so recognizing that, I finally run across first century Aramaic forgiveness, and I decide I'm going to forgive. So that latest person who came up and resonated those brain cells, am I going to let them off the hook for doing that? And is that forgiveness? Not in a million years. Yes, the grief convinced us that letting somebody else off the hook because something was resonating in me is forgiveness, and it's the most destructive lie that has ever appeared on planet Earth. It is the reason for all of our suffering, all of our poverty, all of our wars, all of our conflict, all of our divorce, all of the starvation there is on the Earth is all based in the missing PEACE. People do not know how to forgive. In fact, when people hear me say forgive, what they hear, what most people in the world hear is, let them off the hook for what's happening inside of you. Liar, liar, pants on fire. What in that circumstance does forgiveness look like? Well, remembering that the word forgive is shebag, it means to cancel. I look at the goal that I hold for the object of my attention, of my perception. So Bill came up and did this behavior, resonated those brain cells, and now I have a construct that sure, Bill is the problem. But soon they got to realize that Bill isn't the one with the pain, I am. So while my mind tells me that Bill has a problem, maybe I need to wake up and recognize that Bill looks quite happy. I'm in all kinds of turmoil and pain. Maybe I'm the one who has a problem, and I want to reach in and access and remove the energy behind that problem. And that's what the word forgive means. It's removal. So here's what forgiveness looks like in that situation. Let's say I wanted Bill to honor and cherish me. Let's say that's I come down to recognizing that's my goal. And in the Aramaic language, that goal, which drives my mind to generate a perceptual construct about Bill being the cause of my pain, and the fact that the pain is a result of what's moving inside of me, I'm going to cancel my goal for Bill to honor and cherish me. Now, many people would say, well, that's a silly thing to do because it's reasonable for you to hold a goal for Bill to honor and cherish you. And I agree. It's very reasonable for me to hold a goal for Bill to honor and cherish me. I'm not canceling the goal because I want Bill to stop honoring and cherishing me. I'm canceling the goal because I realize that when I load into my mind a goal for Bill to honor and cherish me, that goal resonates the content of that file being honored and cherished in my mind and sets those brain cells into activity, and that's where my pain is. So I cancel the goal, not because there's anything wrong or inappropriate about the goal. I cancel the goal because the goal, every time I load it in my mind, uses pain content to build my brain's inaccurate picture of Bill, to project that pain into my brain's image of Bill and want to blame him for it. So what I want to do is I want to collapse that false picture. How do I collapse it? I remove the driver that set it into activity. So when I cancel the goal for Bill to honor and cherish me, the perceptual construct based in that internalized dissociated pain collapses. When it collapses in on itself. A good visualization, although I've had people who've called me up on the carpet for using a situation that has so much trauma for so many people, but it's the perfect visualization and everybody can see it in their mind's eye. You remember when, on 9/11, the Twin Towers came down, and you'll remember that those two buildings did something that megastructures have never done in all of the decades they've been building those structures, and has not happened in the 20 years since. Those buildings fell in their own footprint. Within the structure of their own foundations, there's a key word, think about foundation of your perception, those structures fell right in on their own footprint, collapsed. When you cancel a goal, your pained perception collapses in on its own footprint. And if you're willing, and if you're listening, you'll get to access, you'll get to hear, you'll get to directly interact with your internalized pain. Now, when you project it into your brain's image of Bill, you are indirectly interacting with that. And you can't change content that you're in indirect interaction with. There's a power in you that can, but you can't. So I cancel the goal in order to collapse the perceptual construct that Bill is the problem in my life. When that collapses in on its own foundation, I now have access to my own unconscious mind. I have access to my own dissociated content. When I bring that dissociated content to conscious awareness, you see, when I canceled the goal, I cleaned out the space that was filled by this errant, painful perception. I've left a clean and open space in my conscious mind where I can bring forward that hidden content, that dissociated content. And you remember when you're doing the worksheet process, the step before you cancel the goal, you tap into and you go to the experience of love. So you bring love conscious, active, and present. And when that which is less than love is exposed to active love, it dissolves. When pain meets love, and I don't mean love like the, you know, the syrupy, I love you, sexual athletics kind of love, self-sacrifice kind of love. I'm talking about when the actual state of your true created essence, love, being, is present and active. So when that happens and dissociated content has a space to come forward, whatever comes forward begins to dissolve. And that is forgiveness. When that dissolution occurs, remember the word forgive means to remove. The genius of this man 2,000 years ago to explain this to us is just enormous. Now, I've never anywhere in all of my studies in 50 years found anybody who understood the dynamic of why and how that happened, including the person who first introduced me to the idea that shebag meant to cancel. Took me 35 years. Let's see. That's interesting. We're just about at 35 minutes, 33 minutes or so. Took 35 years to understand that. About the same number of minutes it's taken me to explain it. So the second step in the forgiveness process, once you've canceled the goal, if you remember in the standard seven-step worksheet, 5A is I cancel my goal. Step 3, I've identified the goal. Step 4, I've reset love, connected to love. Step 5A, I cancel the goal. And then step 5B, I recognize that there is a power in me that's beyond my own conscious awareness. People have called it the higher power, the superconscious, the subconscious, the primordial X, whatever you call it. There's something in you that has a greater capacity and a greater wisdom than you do. In Aramaic, the man Yeshua called it Ruka Dekudsha. Quite literally, it is the breath. If you go back to the first mention of Ruka Dekudsha in the Aramaic scriptures, you find the creation story, and in the creation story, it says the creator, the Greeks translate, the creator sent out his spirit. In Aramaic, it wasn't that, it was Ruha, it was the breath. The creator sent out that super processing power that knows how to handle and undo everything that you're willing to expose from your dissociated or your unconscious mind. So you set that in step 4, you cancel the goal, and then you set love. Cancel the goal, and then in 5B, you invite that power to go to work. You ask the super processor, you know, I mean, this pain, trauma that, you know, maybe paralyzes and drives disease processes in my body, cancel the thought, is so deeply embedded that maybe it goes back 20 generations. How, with the 9-bit mind, can I ever go back and touch all the lives in 20 generations that were impacted by that adaptation that happened 20 generations ago when this, whatever it was, terrible thing happened that was passed from one generation to another, to another, to another, and the millions of people touched by it between that ancestor and myself? How do I can't do that with a 9-bit mind. But there is a power in you that can. In Aramaic, that power is gendered feminine. And so we would define it as she who undoes the effects of your errors and teaches you the truth. It's called Ruha Dekudsha. Not proclaiming that my pronunciation is anything near perfect. The Greeks translate it as the Holy Spirit. Got nothing to do with the disembodied spirit being. There is a power in you that, if you invite it into activity, will undo the effects of your errors and teach you the truth. We talked about that yesterday. And when you can get your perceptually constructed mind to shut up for a little while, you'll start getting these downloads. You'll start getting information. You will get direct, absolute, clear knowledge right from the source, if you're willing to listen to it. And so that's the core of how the forgiveness process operates. And Jeannie, the thought keeps coming to me as I'm saying this, is that we perhaps need to, maybe we can take this piece and separate it out, and so maybe make a marker for our completion point or see what other discussion goes on. And I was thinking that we might send it to Nene and see if she'll translate it into Spanish for us so it's available to the Spanish-speaking community and we can put it on our Spanish page.
Okay.
So that's the forgiveness process. And we're down to about 20 minutes or so. So if you're out there in listener land, does that make sense to you? Does it leave you with any refinements, any questions, any insights you've had from using the tool? Anything that you can add to from your experience? I just shared with you what my experience is of learning and understanding how to explain forgiveness from the first century Aramaic language. If you're out there in listener land, you know, if you're listening to the show on one of those stations where we can't see you, or you can listen to the show directly by calling 563-999-3581. And then if someone just did, push 1, that'll raise a hand. And this young lady will introduce you by your area code. Go ahead, Jeannie.
Awesome. Area code 314, you're on the air.
This is Doug. Hello, Michael.
Doug, we haven't heard your voice in a long time. Good to hear from you. I've left a couple of messages for you weeks ago and never heard, so I was like, oh, okay. But I'm glad you're well. How are you? What's happening in your world?
Well, it's very difficult. A lot of difficult things going on. I don't want to get too distracted by that. I will just say that I've been struggling with some inflammatory long COVID symptomology for a long time. And I'm working on that, but it's been a challenge for me. And then my main upset disturbance is my attachment to the relationship I've had and not wanting it to end, and it continues on that trajectory. And so,
before you go there, let me just ask, have you been using the Avicen?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think it helps me.
Because the reports I've gotten back are people who've gotten COVID that are using Avicen. It eradicates long COVID because the long-term effects are microcirculation and that this repairs it. So I'm surprised, and, you know, I'd use it as intensely as possible if I were you.
I will do that.
Cool.
Okay. I am kind of on track with some things with that. I just got a blood test. I'm working with some really good people who are working on it. We'll see what that leads to.
Awesome.
Finally now.
Well, we'll hold the space for that healing.
Thank you. The reason I called specifically, though, is because, well, I'll just say I really enjoyed what you said today, how you explain forgiveness process and goal canceling and so forth. But what I heard differently after all this years is when you referred to how we, when we hold a goal about something or someone, we see that thing or that person not through the perception generated by corrupt content, which is how I've always held it to be, our error thought, our inaccurate information, incomplete, and so forth, which is how I've framed it in the past, but through our pain. You use that word, through our pain.
Yes.
Through the pain that we're holding in our body. And I'm
right.
Wondering if...
Which is an indicator of the corrupt data. So they're kind of one and the same.
Well,
pain is an indicator that there is corrupt data moving in the structure.
Okay, and so I don't know how relevant this would be for anybody else, but for me,
go for
two things I want, you know, it's like, one, well, just seeing it that way, seeing it as, okay, because you hold this goal, you're building your perception about that thing out of your pain, which is in your
Correct.
Body, which needs to be forgiven and removed, is profoundly
and you're now, and you're
different
now,
for me.
One thought, and you're now in an indirect relationship with that pain by projecting into your brain's image of someone else. The way that it
yes,
heals
and
is when you come into direct relationship with your pain, which is what
and bring love present
empowers.
Bring love present to it, or bring it present.
Yes.
Right? Bring that
Correct.
Pain present in love.
Yeah.
And
of course,
I,
the miracle says,
I feel.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Say what the
Course in Miracles says: bring the world you do not want to the one you do. So the part of your mind which is in your body that's creating the pain that one is dissociated from is the world I do not want. And what I need to do is bring it to the one that I do want, the world of love. And forgiveness is what does that. By collapsing perception, you get to come back into direct relationship with the pain. And just to add a piece to the puzzle, you know, Jeannie and I had COVID back about 2 months ago, and we both experienced it as profound health upgrades. And one of the things that my take is that this frequency, this little bit of genetic data that's floating around and passing from person to person, tends to resonate or access the darkest parts of our thought structure that we don't want to deal with. And it's an invitation to access it. It will bring those things forward whether you want it to or not. And if you're willing to access it directly, then what you'll do is get gifts from it. If you resist it and you fight against it and stay in a dissociated state, then it's going to tend to create deleterious effects. So the one piece that I'd put just to, you know, to sum the whole conversation up so far is willingness. What is it that I hold in me that I don't want that I need to bring to the world I do? Am I willing to do that, whatever the truth of it is?
Right. And I feel like I'm more, my entire life is being collapsed into surrender right now. I mean, completely, deeply, more profoundly than ever. And I have no idea what that's going to create or how it's going to look going forward.
Right.
And it feels scary and fearful and, you know.
So notice the dissociation.
It triggers.
Notice
it
the dissociation.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It
so
brings up.
It doesn't feel scary. But that's exactly what this virus is about. That's exactly what COVID is. It's going to bring up that which you do not want and give you the opportunity for, or pardon me, cancel the thought about giving you the opportunity. People who are not willing to do the process work, it is literally death thoughts. It's what has killed everybody in our generations, that this thing is coming in and resonating. Those who refuse to deal with it are dying because their death thoughts are now right on the surface and it takes them out energetically. Willingness to embrace that which it's bringing forward, the death thoughts, and bring it to the world you do want, bringing love present and bring it to that presence of love, it's creating healing in those individuals.
Well, that's profound, profound perspective and insight.
Jeannie and I have both experienced extreme upgrades in our health since COVID. You know, I don't know if you've been listening to the show lately. I've shared this a couple of times, but the primary thing that it's done, if you remember, you've been in intensives where I've talked about how I started out as a child or as a baby in utero, and the last 6 days I was there, they gave my mother Pitocin because she had toxemia, and they couldn't get me to come out. And after 6 days of Pitocin, I went into the birth process. They called my father and said to my father, if you don't get this kid, or pardon me, if you don't get down here tonight, you're not going to see this kid alive. And I was almost dead 3 or 4 times the first year of my life from lung disorders. COVID should have killed me with my lung history. For 25 years, I lived on inhalator and pills, and that's what set me on the search for healing. And my lungs have always been the weak place. And that's what most people are dying of COVID or dying from, is lung challenges, the microcirculation in the lungs, where, you know, capillaries in the lungs, the microcirculation in the lungs is what picks up the oxygen to take it into the bloodstream so it becomes available to the rest of the system. And whenever I was under stress, literally my whole life, and I've been doing the planet for a few decades, the place that it always hit was in my lungs. When I had a healing crisis, it was always in my lungs. And there was always just this, I don't know what the noise is. Jeannie, can we mute that, whatever it is? It was always, when I was under stress, that's where it would show up, would be in my lungs. And there, all my life, there's always been just this, at least a slight wheeze in my lungs. It was always, if I took a deep breath, this really slight wheeze. All my life. Fourth day of COVID, 100% gone. 2 months since COVID, that wheeze is 100% gone from my lungs for the first time in my life. That was one of, I could detail several, but that was the main gift that I got. And with my lung history, I should have, I'm in the age range, they call it, where it should have gotten me. And with the lung problems, I should have been dead. I breathe better than I have in my life since COVID.
I love that, you know, that framework, that setup for COVID and the upgrade idea and your story about it upgrading you and all of that.
Jeannie got one just as profound. Jean got one just as profound. You know, she spends, you hear on the show how much time she spends on the computer and what she does and all the monumental things she does. And she's not always in an ergonomically correct posture, so she tends to have challenges with her neck. And for, I don't know, I don't know exactly, sweetie, you would know better than I, the last 2 or 3 years, she's had some fairly significant neck pain. And for the last 6 months, she's worn a tens unit on her neck, a little collar that stimulates the muscles, creates electrical stimulation to handle the pain in her neck. What was it, honey? The third day of COVID, neck pain, 100% gone.
Right.
Really
third day.
Profound.
And how long had that neck pain been going on, sweetie? 2 years, 3 years?
Well, it started probably about the time that you did the last intensive in Abingdon. So that was in 2019.
Yep. 2020, so
there's
22.
Actually, there's a comment in the chat room, and there said, there really is no COVID, so you're doing all this healing work, and you're still under brainwashing. Wow, usually people who do healing work can see the truth. Next, he'll be saying that he got the vaccine. No, we did not get the vaccine. And I will just share, I shared this the other day, that, you know, COVID is a frequency, and there is a real virus called COVID. However, you know what happened when
energy
I got it,
called COVID.
You know, right, think of the all right, first I'll say what came up for me and what I did work around was fear, survival, isolation, separation, you know, things like that. And if you think of the description most people give the virus that's called COVID, or the frequency that's called COVID, those are the descriptions of it. So when I was impacted with that, those were the things that I dealt with during the COVID. So it's, you know, it brings up for different people different things, and it gives an opportunity to face it. And I don't know if you want to address that further or continue with Doug first.
Depends what's in there. Well, just to throw in the thought for our commenter, you know, I need your help. If you know, if you're really on it, as you say you are, I need your help, because I actually have several friends that are in their graves because of COVID. And I need for you to go talk to them and get them out, because I'd really like to see them back here. And being a naturopathic physician, I've worked with a lot of sick people over the last half a century. And I'll offer that, having observed a lot of sick people and a lot of symptoms expressing, there is nothing that I've seen that does to people what I've seen this energetic pattern bring up in people and do. So, well, you may think you're really smart and you really know what you're talking about. I want to see your degree and your certificate in understanding how disease processes work. Or I'll just offer that maybe you're in a place where, you know, there's a great line in the Course in Miracles that says you must be aware of the distorting power of the way you want it to be. So I just invite you to look at that and hold the space. And Doug, let's get back to you. I apologize for distracting, but I think it's all important understanding, important information.
I just mentioned that that there's some very, very good research that I did about the differences in the way Omicron variant infects the cells, in particular of the lungs, and the impact of it on that. That is, that makes it a lot. It's a lot different. That's why it's so much less lethal for so many people. But the curious question around that is, so what is the difference and why did it evolve and what does it do differently in our physiology with bringing up the healing processes like you're talking about? It's just a question that I'm just, you know, that's just coming to mind in the context of all this great stuff you're giving me. But, so I... For me, it's been, you know, I think inflammation, stuck S1 proteins and the monocytes causing inflammation in my vascular system and so forth, that kind of thing going on as the expressed symptomology, at least, of this. And I feel like this
physiological
conversation
reflection.
Is helpful. Physiological reflection, okay, of this stuff that needs to be cleared out. I really like what you said about it. It's very encouraging to take that perspective. Because sometimes it's brought up a lot of discouragement stuff, but
remember one of the questions to ask yourself, Doug, is how does this look like my life? How long have you been in your word was discouragement? How often in your life, how does it look like your life to be in discouragement?
Yes, thank you. Because
it's your perennial issue, right? So that's what this
definitely
energetic pattern is resonating for you to forgive. You got to bring what's at the root of that discouragement, that which you don't want, forward to that active presence of love. That's what you do. That's your healing crisis, your healing process.
Awesome. So tying that back into the core reason I called initially, which is that to see this as to hear you, in my mind's perceptual system anyway, say this differently, and that's one question, is are you saying it differently or am I just seeing it differently? But to say I'm seeing it through my pain, and that my pain is what I need to bring up, you know, the pain that's in my physiology, and bring it to the altar of love and remove it is very, it's just a whole nother level of seeing this.
And remember that pain is the reflection of the presence of mind energy that doesn't belong in the system. Pain is the warning signal. Its purpose is, notice that you're listening more than you've ever listened. And you've heard me say this before, the purpose of pain is to make our ears grow, to get us to listen.
Right. Yes.
And so pain, you know, if we go to the opening words in the book of John, it doesn't say in the beginning was the word and the word became flesh. It says in the beginning was the mind energy and the mind energy became flesh. When you put mind energy, which becomes a molecule, which then lands on a receptor site on a cell, and the cell responds with, hey, this is good energy, wow, this feels great, or this is crap energy, it's going to kill me if you leave it here, stop, this hurts, pain. The cause of that pain is the neural structure, the structure that comes out of the thought appearing in physiology as what we call a chemical. And the skill of forgiveness, and I'd offer that what you've just told us with your words, is that the pain of discouragement, which may go back to, you know, the very earliest experiences of your life, it may go back to in utero experiences, it might be mom's experience while you were in utero, it might be mom's experience while you were being conceived, it might be dad's experience while he was in utero himself, and it might be dad's great-great-great-great-grandfather who had a traumatic issue of being discouraged about something in life. And the skill that forgiveness invites you to develop. The skill that Yeshua says we need is the ability literally to go into not just the cell and pull that neuropeptide off the receptor site, but literally to go into the genes and access that which I do not want and bring it forward in the presence of active love for dissolution. Bring it to the world I do.
The mind energy
which means,
drives the creation.
Exactly. And it means that you have the skills of pain directly. Exactly. Yes. And the landing of the peptide on the cell is where the pain comes from. It's the cell warning us. So when I project that, oh, I'm in pain because of this, whatever my current projection is, because of what my brother did or my sister did or my mother did or my father did or my lover did or my wife did or my child did. When I do that, I'm in an indirect relationship with my pain. I take that energy and I create my brain's image of them. Forgiveness allows me to collapse that and drop into the pain directly, drop into direct relationship with that original neuropeptide and experience the tragedy, the travesty, whatever it was about, directly.
In this conversation today, during it, I was thinking, I know we're almost out of time, I want to try and get this in, about how a lot of my distress and discouragement is because I want someone in my life who will honor me and love me and want to be with me and committed to me because of who I am instead of what I do or don't do and things like that. And then I realized that's what my parents suffered with. You know, it's like they couldn't ever really achieve the relationship they wanted because...
Right.
And so that dynamic, I can see it in me. So anyway.
Well, I'm with you 100%, and I'd suggest you go back and listen to this show again, this last minute that you spoke, and take each of those goals and do worksheets on them. There's where your healing's going to be. Each thing you just said about your parents, but the ones you just listed, each one of those is another worksheet for accessing that. And we'll just, the show's going to cut us off in a few seconds. We'll forget about the outro. We'll just go for it. But there's what I'd offer will be your gift.
And I want to say I have been loved and appreciated, but, you know, bridging that into commitment and the next level of whatever, that just has, for whatever reason, hasn't happened lately for us.
Well, and my offering is you've never been loved, you never will be loved, you never will love anyone, one's ever loved you, because love isn't what you do, it's what you are. But when we make the mistake of thinking it's something we can do, we're going to be done to us, we then just void the whole experience of ourselves as the Creator created us, as the active presence of love, our true essence.
Rocks. That rocks. Thank
next
you for
level.
That reminder.
Yay.
All right,
my friend, we appreciate you. Nice to leave you laughing. And we can continue this conversation tomorrow if it's appropriate.